This is Kathy coming to you with the Piatt County Journal Republican for the week of October the 3rd. Some of these are also dated the 6th. And our first article today is Eichelberger Hall, dedicated at 4-H Campground. Calling 4-H, the thread that holds my life together, Lila Jean Eichelberger's lifelong association with the group now includes Eichelberger Hall, a creative arts building that will serve participants of the 4-H Memorial Camp near Monticello. The 4,000-square-foot space, 3,200 square feet inside and another 800 of paved patio space outside, will be used for creative arts efforts that will include arts and crafts, STEM work, music, and even some dancing. It began as a replacement for the current arts and crafts building at the campground, but with Eichelberger's input, it has expanded with a larger vision to allow youth to express their creativity. So you're sitting in a building now that's going to be a lot of things for a lot of groups, not just the original concept of an arts and crafts building replacement, Camp Director Kurt Sinclair told a group that gathered at the campground on November 28th to dedicate the structure to Eichelberger. This is a place where youth have a sense of belonging, where they're developing their independence, pursuing their passions, stretching to do things they've never been able to before, and they're going with lifelong memories and lifetime friends, added Director of Illinois 4-H Dr. Lisa Diaz. That's what you're enabling for us to continue as a proud tradition, and expanding our ability to open that opportunity to more youth. Eichelberger grew up in Mason County, attending a one-room schoolhouse in her formative years with anywhere from 3 to 10 students. Her parents were both involved in 4-H and got Lila Jean involved at a young age, something she appreciates to this day, noting that she was fairly isolated in her rural upbringing. "So I relied on 4-H for socialization," she said. "I would not be anything if it hadn't been for 4-H. Referred to as Shorty by her friends, Eichelberger was in 4-H 11 years as a youth and kept going from there as a leader, later being inducted into both the Illinois and National 4-H Halls of Fame. She was also on the 4-H Foundation Board for the state from 1993 to 1998, but has far from retired from participation in the organization. "It's long past 1998 and she's still serving. She still shows up to meetings and is a member everyone really looks up to, and we value her opinion. She's been a friend of 4-H, inducted into the 4-H Hall of Fame. She was a 4-H house member when she was on campus, so her accolades go on and on and on," added Angie H. Bernard, the executive director of the Illinois 4-H Foundation. Sinclair noted that the Lakeside building will not only provide opportunities for the 8,000 campers that show up each summer, but will be a focal point for donors who are needed to fund other camp improvements, from addressing old roads to the not-so-glamorous areas that include water and sewer systems. "This is going to be the visible things that customers are going to flock to, and it's going to grow this camp in ways that other people aren't even going to see. And it's going to sustain this camp for a long time. This is a big deal," said Sinclair. At the dedication ceremony last week, two plaques were unveiled that will remind people of Eichelberger's contributions. A long plank of black cherry wood from a tree from Allerton Park will notify those approaching the new building that it is indeed Eichelberger Hall. Construction on the building began in 2017, and the installation of heaters the day prior to the dedication spelled its completion. It includes 3 garage-style doors that can be opened to keep it cool during the warm summer months. Eichelberger named 4-H as the beneficiary of her life insurance policy in order to help pay for the building, but Sinclair made sure it was constructed during her lifetime so she could help dedicate it and see it used. She also has 2 degrees from the University of Illinois and was an area teacher for most of her adult life. This headline, Sarah Gordo Board Discusses Expanded Co-op, by Christy Jankowski. The Sarah Gordo School Board met for their regularly scheduled school board meeting on November 26th and discussed the proposed intergovernmental agreement with BEMET for high school volleyball. Currently, all high school sports, with the exception of volleyball and cross-country, are combined. Sarah Gordo does not currently have cross-country, while BEMET does. "BEMET has provided us a proposed intergovernmental agreement for high school volleyball," said Sarah Gordo High School Principal Jerry Radebaugh. "They," meaning the BEMET School Board, "are going to have further discussion at their December board meeting and beyond as far as junior high co-ops and cross-country is considered. But they have nothing to propose at this time as far as those are considered. It sounds like some concerns on their end they would like to discuss further." The volleyball proposal seems similar to the sample agreements that Sarah proposed last year. Sarah proposed a two-thirds, one-third split, with Sarah being the host school. Sarah would be responsible for two-thirds of the financials, practices, games, more, and the mascot would remain the Bronco, with the colors being orange and blue. This is very similar to the sample agreements we did last year, added Rodabau. There were a few concerns with combining junior high sports because of a possible lack of supervision. Sarah Gordo ends its school day at 2:56, with Bement wrapping up around 3:15. When there is a practice in Sarah Gordo, there can be a delay between when the school day ends and the practice begins. Board Member Secretary Karen Friese added, "Angie and I went and toured all of the Bement facilities, and that was brought up to us at the end of the tour as well. They had discussed and some concerns, especially with younger kids. There was also discussion over transportation costs and other possible expenses that may incur, such as basketballs." Superintendent Robinson stated they could continue to converse back and forth, see what, if there are any things, we can iron out regarding the other co-ops in written form. Nothing was formally approved Monday night regarding the high school volleyball co-op between the two districts, but it will likely be considered in the future. And under substitute teacher pay, as many districts in the area, Sarah Gordo is facing a shortage of substitute teachers. It's an increasing problem area shortage of substitute teachers. Some mornings, one or both of these principals are making double digit and then some phone calls and still not finding anyone. I can't say throwing $10 more will solve the problem. It probably will not, said Robinson. Rodabau added, "I had two sick teachers, and I called 25 people, and I didn't get any one of them on the morning of the board meeting." Robinson added that the increase of pay might help secure long-term subs, stating, "But as we have things come in where we know in advance," adding, "we don't want to put in position getting turned down for lack of what people are paying." Both board members, Debbie Greenwood and Tony Pirano, stated, "What about increasing it even more so it would be higher than other districts?" Most districts in the Piatt County area pay between $90 and $100. Pirano stated, "Well, like Debbie was saying, if it's significantly higher, you might open up a whole new pool of teachers who would consider doing it." It was decided to raise the pay from $90 to $100 per day. Bement recently raised their sub-pay to $100. And a construction update? Robinson reported about construction progress, stating that they meet every 2 weeks with Plocker to discuss the progress. Robinson stated that the most recent develops included opening up the new kitchen prep area back into the new walk-in freezer cooler storage area. Also, removed what used to be some of the exterior wall to the kitchen cafeteria dining area. There's a temporary wall up for now, and that will come down when it's time to walk through that area. The gymnasium is also progressing well, states Robinson. The new gym is progressing pretty quickly now. Most of all, getting the bare bones prepped and ready, getting the gym walls painted, floor down, and those types of things. Elementary principal Jody Neville and social worker Shelley Fry will be handing out food baskets again this year. There will be a total of 16 baskets. The American Legion Post 117 has provided 8 hams and 8 turkeys. The ladies of the Oakley Brick Church will supply the fruit. The elementary school is collecting canned goods. Neville states that the district collects around 600 to 800 cans each year. Rodabau highlighted the dual credit program with Richland Community College. "I think our partnership at Richland is one of the things that sets Sarah Gordo apart. All students have the opportunity to obtain their associate's degree from Richland Community College and their high school diploma from Sarah Gordo at the same time." Rodabau stated that he believes this year Sarah Gordo will have 4 students on track to do just that. Rodabau went on to add their partnership with Heartland Technical Academy sets them apart as well. Committee recommends moving the airport by Steve Hoffman. A special committee studying the future of the City of Monticello's airport has provided clarification on one major point. The facility will not be able to continue operations at its current location just south of town. Once that fact was determined, other landowners have come forward with possibilities for new locations, giving the group hope that the city can still house a public airport. 2 options were known when the report was issued, and 2 have come forth since then, according to the person who has headed up the group. The committee understands that at least one of those parcels has been evaluated at some point throughout the project's history, and that, from an engineering perspective, it seems likely both options would be deemed suitable for a minimal airport, committee chairman Mike Atwood said in a report delivered to the city on November 9th. Time is running short as the airport's lease on its current site off Kratz Road expires February 2nd. The same time state waivers expire, which currently allow it to operate with line-of-sight and side runway transition deficiencies. Although the official report has been delivered, committee members and other volunteers are still working to see if moving the airport is feasible. They hope that the Illinois Department of Transportation Division of Aeronautics will allow it to still be certified as a public airport if it is out of operation for a period of time. The landowner at the current site, the Kratz family, has made it clear that the land will go back into farm production next spring. Atwood would give an update to the City Council on December 10th and feels more will be known by the end of the month. I feel like we've got good momentum. There are clearly some hurdles, but I feel like we've got good direction. We have some options that appear to be feasible, but we're going to have to hustle, he added. As for lease and construction costs, a local development agency has offered to fund at least a portion of the cost. Atwood said Monticello Industrial Action has about $400,000 in its coffers at this point. An estimate provided by an ad hoc committee 31 years ago had pegged the cost to construct a new airport at $1.3 million, and the City Council had also considered a $5.3 million hard surface option, but that option was tabled in 2006. But Atwood feels that the 160 acres of land needed for some of those options and the proposed hard surface were excessive. The current grass strip is on 18 acres of land owned by the Kratzes. A new facility would need around 25 acres to take care of the transition issues on either side of the runway. With that in mind, he feels the cost to lay out a new landing strip could be funded by non-municipal sources. There is no consideration at all that you would have the city coming up with money, said Atwood. The facility is technically under city supervision, but it is run day-to-day by Sage Air. The city only allocates approximately $5,000 annually toward airport operations. In their report, the Airport Study Committee admitted that some of the benefits of the airport are difficult to quantify, but feel it is still worth keeping. Access to general aviation strengthens the community infrastructure and provides tangible and intangible value to the area. It is yet another brick in Monticello's strong foundation, which includes a remarkable school system, access to a reliable water supply, strong independent health care, prosperous farmland, proximity to larger communities, and many more advantages, said the report. Every responsible effort should be made to maintain each element of Monticello's economic foundation. The history of the airport is that in 1925, the first airplane landed in Monticello, and 3 years later, aircraft started to land in Kratz Pasture near the current airport site. At that point, 6-foot-long arrows were painted on the roof of the school gym to help aircraft recognize the city and find their direction. The airport became official in 1968 with permission from landowner Vivian Kratz. Sage Air was formed in 1988 to provide day-to-day operations, which it continues to do. In 2000, the Illinois Department of Transportation notified Sage Air of a pending downgrade from public facility to restricted landing area due to the line of sight and side setback issues. Waivers were issued to allow the airport to continue operations. In 2015, a waiver extension was obtained, but the Illinois Division of Aeronautics has since told the city there would be no more extensions after the current lease expires on February 2nd of 2019. The current runway measures 2,798 feet long, and it is 100 feet wide. I just checked the obituary listings for this week, and according to what it says online, there were none. So let me move on with the news. Schonkweiler Memorial installed. Employees of Adams Memorial installed a commemorative marker in Monticello on Monday in honor of former Piatt County Judge John P. Schonkweiler. At top, the 2,500-pound stone is lifted off the truck that transported it from Charleston to Monticello. Workers guided it into place on the northeast corner of the Piatt County Courthouse lawn. Schonkweiler presided over cases in the 6th Judicial Court in Monticello for 47 years, serving as Chief Judge of the Circuit for 18 years until his death in 2012. A committee formed in 2016 recommended a gazebo for the courthouse lawn, but could not raise the $20,000 needed to purchase the materials. The family of the late judge paid for the memorial that was installed this week. Spencer is the new county board chairman, by Steve Hoffman. On a third try, the Piatt County Board elected Ray Spencer as its new chair at the organizational meeting on Monday. Spencer, a District 1 representative, had been serving as vice chair of the board. Spencer actually nominated District 3 representative Randy Schumard as chair to start the organizational meeting. However, the ensuing vote of 3-0 with three abstentions did not give Schumard the four votes needed, according to Piatt County Clerk Jennifer Harper. Bob Murrell then attempted to nominate Dale Latz to the top post, but Latz declined. He said after the meeting he was not ready for the time commitment and that he felt an elected member should chair the board. Latz was appointed to a District 1 opening on June 13th of this year. Schumard then nominated Spencer, who was approved as chair by the unanimous 6-0 vote. Board members followed that with a unanimous appointment of Schumard as vice chair. Spencer replaces Al Manant, who had served as chair since the resignation of Randy Keith. Keith stepped down after finishing second in the primary for the 101st District House seat on March 20th. Keith cited a lack of voter confidence in his resignation. Manant chose not to run for another term on the county board, so his term expired on December 1st. The special county board meeting also included the swearing-in of three members who won election on November 6th. Those included Spencer, Schumard, and two new District 2 representatives, Shannon Carroll. Farmer City man pleads guilty to shooting by Tim Dittman. A Farmer City 18-year-old faces 6 to 15 years behind bars after admitting to the shooting of a man during a dispute in April. DeWitt County State's Attorney Dan Markwell said that Michael Cummins pleaded guilty last week to aggravated battery with a firearm. The normal sentencing range on that charge is 6 to 30 years, but Markwell is recommending that Judge Carl Koritz sentence Cummins to no more than 15. Sentencing is set for January 18th. Markwell said that the shooting happened on April 11th in Farmer City. He said there was an ongoing dispute between Cummins and the victim, also an 18-year-old male. On that day, Markwell said Cummins, then 17, saw the man across the street, come outside, and argued with him, then fired a gun once at his feet. Markwell said the victim then ran away, and Cummins fired two more shots, one of which hit the victim in the abdomen. Mike Walsh Memorial Run Walk is December 8th. The 9th annual Mike Walsh Memorial Run Walk will start at 9 a.m. Saturday, December 8th, at the Bement High School Gymnasium. Registration begins at 8 a.m. Refreshments will be provided after the walk run, and you will receive a T-shirt. Proceeds from this run walk are donated to Bement High School to provide scholarships for graduating seniors furthering their education at a 2- or 4-year college and playing sports and to purchase items the school needs to benefit the students. The Memorial Run has purchased new uniforms for the girls' basketball program, new bleachers at the football field, new sound system in the big gym, and 11 Chromebooks, which are used by the students. Also, since beginning this 5K run walk, 7 student athletes were given scholarships to continue their sports careers at the college of their choice. Mike Walsh was an alumnus of Bement High School and volunteered many hours coaching and assisting with the athletic programs at the school. He served on the school board for 10 years and was also an active member of the Bement Athletic Booster Association. He volunteered as a coach for girls' basketball program and played a big part into introducing girls' softball into Bement High School, as well as volunteer assistant coach. Every December, the school hosts a Mike Walsh Memorial Girls' Basketball Tournament in his name. Walsh got to see all three of his children play college athletics, and with the fundraising efforts, organizers are making that possible for other local families. Bement School to Get Kitchen Makeover by Steve Hoffman. The school district kitchen in Bement is getting a substantial Christmas present, a total of $36,728.03 in new energy-efficient appliances from Ameren of Illinois. Bement learned on November 26 that it was a recipient of the kitchen makeover that it had applied for earlier this year. The new equipment is free, including installation, and will be in place by December 15th. It will replace some appliances that date to the installation of the kitchen in 1967. We are getting a new dishwasher, a new convection oven, a new upright reach-in double door freezer, and a new food warmer. This is pretty exciting stuff, said School Superintendent Sheila Greenwood. The most expensive replacements include a $13,826 Combo Therm 68,200 BTU oven steamer and an $11,587 industrial-sized dishwasher. Greenwood said decades-old equipment will be replaced with higher-efficiency models, providing energy savings to the district. She will not be sorry to see the old equipment hauled away. When I sent in the pictures of our old appliances, I joked that they probably deserve a place in a museum somewhere, added Greenwood. Allerton Light Show debuts on Friday. Allerton Park and Retreat Center Christmastime activities officially kick off this Friday night with the opening of the Kirby Winter Wellness Walk from 5 to 9 p.m. The Holiday Showcase is also open at that time and continues from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. The Wellness Walk will be open 5 to 8 p.m. Tuesdays through Saturdays through January 5th. New this year will be a Feast of Yule celebration on December 21st, the winter solstice. Guests will gather around a bonfire and celebrate the Scandinavian tradition of burning the Yule log. For more information, go online to www.allerton.illinois.edu. Nursing Program Endowment named for Dr. Wittick. The Parkland College Foundation has been chosen to receive a $100,000 donation to support the school's nursing program, which will be named after former Monticello resident Dr. Helen Mackey Wittick. The gift, donated anonymously in mid-November by friends of the late Dr. Wittick, will establish the nursing endowment in her name. Income from the gift will be used to provide a $5,000 scholarship annually to a student who has been accepted into the nursing program to cover tuition, fees, and books. Helen Wittick, a native of rural Monticello, practiced podiatric medicine for 45 years at the Wittick Foot Clinic in Urbana. Before earning her Doctor of Podiatric Medicine from the Scholes College of Podiatry in Chicago in 1957, however, she practiced and taught nursing in Monticello and Alton, Illinois for a decade. Nursing was always Wittick's first love, which is why her friends want to create the nursing scholarship in her memory, according to Foundation Director Tracy Walfeld. Wittick, who passed away in 2015 at the age of 93, was known for her philanthropy to numerous organizations in the area, some of which are recipients of her trust. The longtime Urbana resident was a member of the Altoosa Club of Champaign-Urbana, serving as president from 1967 to 69, and as governor of Altoosa International District 6 from 1981 to 83. She is a former member of the Auxiliary Coast Guard. Dr. Wittick was past worthy matron of the Myrtle Chapter 131 of Eastern Star, past royal matron of Number 17 Amaranth, past worthy High Priestess of White Shrine of Jerusalem, Mizpah, No. 11, and past worthy Grand Commander of True Kindred, No. 15. Friends of Dr. Wittick, Walfeld, and Parkland faculty and administrators. Her numerous civic memberships include the Piatt County Museum, Champaign County Humane Society, American Podiatry Association, and American Podiatry Women's Association. A former Kentucky colonel, Wittick also taught Sunday school for 25 years at the Grace United Methodist Church in Urbana. She practiced podiatry at two clinics she built in downtown Urbana before retiring in 2002 at the age of 80. The first was a smaller clinic at 1208 East Main Street, which is now the Little Red Doghouse pet grooming business. The larger clinic next door at 1210 East Main Street was completed in 1987. Realizing she had more land than needed to build the second clinic, she donated part of that land to the Habitat Humanity to build homes. We at Parkland College Foundation are grateful that Helen's passion for helping people will continue through the Dr. Helen M. Wittick Nursing Scholarship, Walfeld said. Keys to Monticello's First Football Championship by Steve Hoffman. Monticello's defense stood firm when faced with fourth down challenges, stopping Byron four times, including the first two drives the Tigers entered the red zone. Much like games earlier in the season, the Sages' defensive unit bent, but it didn't break. The bruising Byron run game totaled 307 rushing yards on 71 carries and scored its fewest points of the season, 20. Big Game Bundy. Not only did number 35 score all three touchdowns for the Sages, including the team's first on a 95-yard screen pass from quarterback Braden Snyder, he also helped seal the game with an athletic interception on defense. Bundy ran for 52 yards and a touchdown and caught four passes for 146 yards and two scores. All-Stater shines. Snyder, named to the Illinois High School Football Coaches Association Class 3A All-State Team November 14th, played like a state standout on the highest stage. The senior captain completed 12 of 21 passes for 213 yards and two touchdowns while adding 51 yards rushing on eight carries. Snyder broke the Monticello High School record for passing yards in a single season with a total of 3,343 yards in 14 games after Friday's contest. Perfect kicker. Place kicker Luke Rudolph was nearly perfect on extra points over the course of the season, and the senior went 4-for-4 on kicks on Friday. Rudolph nailed all three of Monticello's points after touchdown attempts and also made a 28-yard field goal 23 seconds before the halftime, a kick that hit the upright but fell through for 3 points. The championship game featured 4 lead changes, with Monticello taking the lead 17-14 with 1:47 left in the third quarter and hanging on for the rest of the way. State title appearance brings everyone to Champaign. Sage fans, large and small, young and old, Monticello natives and transplants alike, united to fill Memorial Stadium the day after Thanksgiving, standing the entire game in rainy conditions to root the Sages football squad to victory. There were thousands of them in attendance. As a matter of fact, it seems like the entire town came out despite the soggy conditions, and the figures back that up. With an official town population of 5,555, an estimated 5,000 to 6,000 were wearing the purple and gold on the west side stands of the stadium come game day. There are plenty of former Stages gridiron specialists on hand, including players from the 50s to the recent past. A group photo taken of the football alumni showed about 150 former players making the trip to Champaign. Were they possibly living vicariously through the 2018 team, the first football squad in school history to win a state championship? A little bit, yeah, said Tyrus Welter, the son of head coach Cully Welter, and a member of the 2001 team that made it to the state quarterfinals but lost to rival Unity. I'm pretty happy for him, said the younger Welter, on rooting not only for the players but his dad. He's excited to be here, and it's exciting for the kids. Jeff Clodfelter played on the Okaw Conference champion MHS team in 1965, prior to the implementation of the football playoff system, and was a little nervous prior to kickoff. I wish the wind weren't blowing so much, he said, noting Byron's stellar running game, but I've been scared before, and these guys are amazing. Bill Pike's Sage football days go back even further, as he quarterbacked the squad in 1957. He was not able to attend the game, but was thrilled with the state title for his local team. We are proud of you guys for being the first to win a state championship. It's been 61 years since I had the honor of playing quarterback for the Sages, and I still have good memories. You guys will have this honor your entire lives. 61 years from now, you will still be the first team to win state, Pike stated in an email to the Journal Republican. There have been Sage teams who have come close to the state title tilt, including the 1997 squad that lost by a scant 3 points in the semifinals. We had a pretty good team, and these guys have gone a little further, so it's neat to see, said Nate Bickew, a member of that team. Bickew's former teammate, Justin Widener, also in attendance at the pregame tailgate, was taking in the surroundings that are at the IHSA State Football Championships. This is all new for us. It's our first experience here, too, added Widener. I'm pretty confident. I think we've got the squad to do it. Tom Apperson is a 2002 MHS grad. As a football player, he was glad to see a lot of alumni here because this team has done what a lot of us wanted to do, so it's really exciting, and I'm happy for them. I think the whole community is proud, added Emily Widener, a local 1996 grad who is the principal of Monticello's White Heath Elementary School. And that's all we have time for today. I hope you've enjoyed the readings from the Journal Register, and we will be back with you next week. This is Kathy wishing you a good weekend.